Hello everyone and welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 21. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me today is no one. It's just me all by myself, so I've got you guys for about an hour and a half. Now, sadly, Glenn couldn't join me because I was doing funny shifts. I do shift work, and we just couldn't find the right time. And as well, Swainy can't record with us either because he does like really long shifts, and he's also working really hard doing the knowledge. So I'm hoping to record with these guys at some point for episode 22. So anyway, let's quickly tell you a little bit about what I've got lined up for you guys. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I've been up to, about how you can win the Amiga 500. We've got an iTunes review. Tell you a little bit about Twitter, our Facebook, a retro community summer, and then after that, the grand finale will be the top 20 retro games ever. Well, my favorite top 20 retro games ever. So yeah, it's going to be another fantastic show, so let's get on with it.
Hello, this is Potty Boy, and you're listening to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
So, what I've been up to. Now guys, I love retro gaming, you all know I love retro gaming, but unfortunately, I just haven't got enough time in the day to play as much retro games as I want to. You all know that I've pretty much finished all the painting and decorating in this house that I moved into. It's all done, but still, obstacles get in the way, you know, real life, shift work, family, kids. So I haven't really been playing much, but the game I have been playing is a game that I've been playing on the way to work and on the way back from work, and it's a game called Crusader of Sentai. Now this is on the Sega Mega Drive, but I've been playing it on emulation. I've been playing it on my PSP, and I tell you what, this game really is a hidden gem. It's absolutely fantastic. Now, the Mega Drive had amazing games. It had some good RPGs, but it was always missing like a Zelda type clone. And yeah, this is basically it. It controls and looks and feels like Zelda, the same way you power up, the way you unlock things. I wouldn't say it goes as deep in progression the way Zelda does. It's a little bit more, I don't know. Zelda feels a lot more accomplished. Zelda feels more like a 5-star game, and this feels like a 4.5 star game. I mean, the story's simple. You know, you're like a little kid. You've got to go and see the king. Some evil things have happened, but it has got some twists and turns. You know, not all monsters are evil. Maybe we're the evil ones, the humans who are attacking the monsters and so on. It's an interesting game for the Sega Mega Drive. I've been playing it now for a good sort of 10 hours, I think, and I think I'm pretty much near completion of the game. I'll tell you a little bit more about this game once I have finished playing it. But it's a great game. If you haven't played Crusader of Sentai, and if you're into your Zelda-type RPGs, especially on the Mega Drive, I'd highly recommend that you give this game a go. So, next up, we've got the How to Win an Amiga 500. Now, this is so simple. If you want an Amiga 500 with a bunch of games, which again, was kindly donated by Swainy, so thank you very much, Dane, for doing that. I really appreciate that. It's a fantastic prize, and it's so simple how you can win this. All you have to do is go to retroasylum.com, click on the forum, go into site and podcast stuff, and then it's like a section there that tells you how you can win an Amiga 500. And all you have to do, instead of going through all that, you just have to email me at therealloquemaniac@googlemail.com, and you just have to record an MP3 telling us why you like the Retro Asylum so much. Now, that's not the only way you can win it. To make it easier on everyone, why not make a little YouTube video? You can put, like, I don't know, some retro gaming in the background, and you can just narrate it and go, yeah, I like the Retro Asylum because of whatever reason you like it. Send me a link. If you had recorded an MP3, like I said, send it to me via email. If you do it via YouTube, send me a link, and you automatically be entered into this competition. and you can win this amazing, amazing prize. Now, the winner will be announced, I think, towards the end of September on episode 25. It's so easy. So if you want to win an Amiga 500, enter this competition, because you've got a real big chance of winning this prize. So yeah, let's go on to iTunes now. Now, iTunes, we have got our 31st iTunes review. Now, I'm so happy about this, because iTunes reviews really, really make us happy. And the reason why I say it really makes us happy is because we are the UK's number one retro gaming podcast because of your reviews. Your reviews basically help us get noticed to other retro gaming fans, because when they're looking on iTunes, they look at the ratings and the reviews, and we've probably got the most reviews of any retro gaming podcast out there, if not the most, really. Now, the last iTunes review we've got is from someone called Hul Ekul. I think I said that right. And Hul Ekul put, "The best retro gaming podcast around. I'm new to Retro Asylum Party, but in no time become one of my favorite podcasts. The guys deliver an unashamedly a British viewpoint on all types of retro gaming and manage to capture the wonder and awe that we all got swept up in our younger days from our early machines. The podcasts are funny as well as informative, and there's more content than you could shape a zipstick at. So what are you waiting for? Get waggling." So thank you so much, Holy Cool, for your 5-star iTunes review. I really appreciate it. Now, we've got 31. I'm hoping, guys, to have 40 iTunes reviews before Christmas. That's my mission. So all you have to do, it's only takes a minute, doesn't cost a thing. Just, if you've got iTunes, please give us a review if you haven't. Tell us why you like us. Tell us, yeah, how long you've been listening to us, what's good, what's bad. Well, maybe not what's bad. But yeah, spread the word via iTunes. And if you don't like iTunes, because I know a lot of people don't like iTunes, then why not then just basically get a friend who has got iTunes and they can do a review on your behalf. And that would really help us. So yeah, please leave us an iTunes review. Thank you very much. Right, so let's see what else we got planned for you next. Yes, Twitter. Now, guys, I'm always tweeting. Not only am I always tweeting all the latest blog posts or community blogs that community have done, they go straight to my Retro Asylum 1 Twitter. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, all you have to do is go to Retro Asylum 1 via Twitter and you'll find us there. You can also find our Twitter link on retroasylum.com. And I'm always tweeting about random things I'm doing, random games I'm playing and so on. So, yeah, you know, follow us on Twitter. The next thing we've got lined up is Facebook. Now, we are on Facebook. All you have to do if you're on Facebook, go into Retro Asylum and like us. What I tend to do down there as well, I tend to link all our posts, all our blogs, all site news, everything gets put onto Facebook. So we've got 16 likes, and what I would like even more is if we've got a couple more likes. So yeah, if we can get another, you know, 4 or 5, and at the same time you can make friends with the people on the Retro Asylum Facebook page. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, I've got two more things I should be telling you about. The Retro Community Summer. Right, so this is a good one. Now, for every half episode from episode 20 to episode 25 and a half, we're going to be interviewing our own Retromaniacs. On episode 20 and a half, we had Scopey. On episode 21 and a half, we've got Retro Darren coming up. And I'll tell you what, that was one hell of an interview. And I'm sure you guys will absolutely enjoy that. So we've got a few more of these Retromaniac interviews lined up. And they will be every half episode till episode 25 and a half. That's pretty much it. So let's move on to what this show is all going to be about. And it's my top 20 retro games. Now, guys, please bear in mind, this is my personal top 20 retro games. I'm not saying this is the definitive 20 retro games out there that are the best, better than ever. And to be honest with you, my mind keeps on changing. Every time I look at this list, I find a game that should be in there. So I think I've created my definitive list, for now anyway, while I'm recording this show. And yeah, let me know whether you guys agree or disagree. And tell me via the blog post, once this podcast does come out, what games you would have included in there as well. So let's start off with number 20, F-Zero on the Super Nintendo. Now, F-Zero was one of the launch games on the Super Nintendo, and this really showcased what the Super Nintendo could do. It had amazing music, had colorful graphics, and most of all, it had Mode 7. Now, the game was only one player, but that didn't stop it from being an absolutely fantastic, insane, fast game. I had never seen anything or played anything like this before. Now, I was a big fan of arcade racing games. I was a big fan of games on the Spectrum. And, you know, even on the Master System, on the NES, and racing car games. But I'd never, ever seen anything like F-Zero. It just had this really beautiful quality of it. And what really helped the atmosphere as well, it was even more, was the music. The music was just phenomenal. It was catchy as heck, you know, it was really catchy. It just added so much atmosphere to an already fantastic game. Now, I know there have been further F-Zero games. There's been F-Zero on the N64, which is fantastic. On the GameCube, which I haven't played, but I've heard great things about it. And on the Game Boy Advance and so on. But for me, F-Zero on the Super Nintendo, it's just superb. It deserves to be up there in the top 20. So yeah, that was my number 20th game. Let me quickly tell you what I've got at number 19, Link's Awakening on the Game Boy. Now, this was a bit of a difficult decision for me. Now, Link's Awakening kinda feels like a scaled down version of A Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo, and I was thinking, which one should I put in there? But I've gone for the Game Boy version because it's a smaller game, it's a great game, and it fits the Game Boy perfectly. And it's one of these games that you can finish in a good couple of hours, but it's got so much replayability factor, and every time you think about the game, it's got so many magical moments. And this game, basically, you see Link waking up on an island. He got shipwrecked, and basically he gets taken in by some girl and her dad. And then they find out something about this mysterious creature called the Windfish. So Link sets off on his adventure through this magical land. And I tell you what, the story is gripping. The playability is fantastic. The puzzles are easy. And it's an amazing game. And it's really an amazing accomplishment for what they could do on the Game Boy. Now, I know they did come out of a Game Boy Color version, which added like an extra dungeon and added color to it, but I'll always prefer the normal Game Boy version, because I spent hours and hours playing this game, and I spent even more time looking for every little hidden seashell that was. And how you found the seashells was that you had to dig up with a shovel that you could either steal from a shop or buy from the shop, and you'd have to dig up every single bit of grass from this, you know, land that you were in. And I found all the seashells. Now, I have got this on my normal Game Boy, and it's a great game. It's just as great as I remember it, and it's a game that I recommend that every Game Boy owner should have. Definitely check that one out. Now, at number 18, Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion. Now, Castle of Illusion, wow, what a game. Absolutely fantastic. I first saw the screenshots on, I think, Mean Machines or CBG. It was somewhere right in the back. And I couldn't believe how amazing the still photographed pictures, you know, the images looked of this game. It looked like a Disney cartoon. And it was a platformer much in the style of Super Mario, but it featured Mickey Mouse. And I think at the time, I don't think Mario World was out, I don't believe. So there was nothing quite like it. And still to this day, the visuals of this game are just phenomenal. They're really magical. Every level has so much atmosphere. You've got the forest, you've got the sort of like candy land, you've got like a toy land and so on. And the boss characters are really interesting to fight against. And again, it's not the most difficult game. It's really easy to get into, and with a bit of practice, you can finish it. But for me, I love this game. It's one of the games that as soon as I saw in a magazine, I had to get. And when I did get it, it played even better than I thought it would do. And I've played this game recently, and it's just there. It's just as good as I remember it. And it's a game I recommend that everyone check out. Now, there was a scaled-down version that came out in the Sega Master System, but the version that is in my top 20 is definitely the Mega Drive version. Definitely check out that game, guys. You know, it's probably one of the best platformers ever. Definitely up there with Super Mario World. So, let me tell you what I've got at number 17. At number 17 is the only shooter I've got on my list. And it's an arcade game. It's R-Type. Now, R-Type was just amazing. I've never been good at these sort of games. I'm always terrible at sort of like these sort of like shooting games. You play this sort of little spaceship and you fly from left to right, and you're basically set against a backdrop of Geiger type sort of artwork and creatures. And it's just amazing. Visually, it was amazing. I remember that first boss that I fought against, something Dops or Sorotops, or he looks like the alien from Aliens, basically. But it's just everything about this game is perfect. It's a tough game. It really is hard. The first level, it is hard. It's kind of difficult to get off the first level without even dying. With a bit of practice, you can. Later on, the levels, they just get tougher and tougher, to the point where I couldn't finish it up until I got the Xbox 360 version, and I gave myself infinite continues, which was the only way I can do it. But what I like about this game was that it had a few innovative things that most shooters at the time didn't have. First of all, you had your power-up shot, where all you had to do was keep your finger on your shoot button, and slowly it would start building up energy, and your little spaceship would start to spark and would start to glow like a bluish color. And then if you release that button, big energy sort of like laser sort of ball would sort of like shoot out the front, and you could take out loads of enemies in one go. So you could use that to your advantage, you know, when you needed to. Now, the next great thing about this game was the addition of the Force Ball. Now, the Force Ball was this indestructible metallic orb that if you got, you could stick onto the front of your ship. It could detach, you could put it on the back of your ship. You could even sort of just send it charging in front of you, destroying enemies. And sometimes you could use it to your advantage if, like, enemies were shooting at you. You could sort of use that as a shield to protect you. It was fantastic. And some of the power-ups you could get as well was like the multicolored lasers, which would sort of like shoot laser beams, and the lasers would bounce off everywhere. It's one of the most memorable games I've played. I'll never forget the second level, that big sort of the second or third level, it's got like this big spaceship, and it just comes onto the screen, and you've basically got to shoot all its weaponry, all its arsenal that is shooting at you, all its turrets and so on. And I love the arcade game, and I've got to give credit. I think every single conversion of this game was ported fantastically. They've done an amazing job. Now, I've played this game recently, and again, it's up there with some of the best shooting up games ever. To me, it's my favorite sort of like shooting game ever. It's near perfect for me. And that's why I highly recommend that everyone give R-Type a go. And I'm glad it's definitely in my top 20. Now, next up, I've got at number 16, Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap. Now, Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap, it's not to be confused with the arcade Wonder Boy 3, which is a completely different game. That was a two-player sort of like scrolling, platforming, shoot 'em up game. where this one really feels like Super Metroid or Symphony of the Night. It's really got that Metroidvania type feel. Now this is on the Sega Master System, and it probably is the best Sega Master System game ever. And basically, continues off after Super Wonder Boy, and at the end of Super Wonder Boy, you kill the dragon, but you get cursed, and you get turned into this dragon salamander-type creature. So it's up to you to basically rescue and cure Wonder Boy, basically. Now, you can turn into different creatures at different points of this game, and every creature's got its own strengths and its own weaknesses. Like the first creature you start as, which is the dragon, you get to breathe fire. Other creatures you turn into later on, like a lion, then like a bird, a little mouse, a little merman. And it's just superb. It's very open world because, like I said, you don't have to follow a certain route. Certain areas you won't be able to access until you change into certain characters. And I love this game. It's a tough game. It really is tough. I've tried playing it recently and I really couldn't get it anywhere. But there is an amazing level cheat which you can sort of change and alternate between the characters. And on the Sega Master System, all you have to do is enter your name as West 1. Now that would be W-E-5-T-O-N-E and West 1. And that gave you the ability to basically be all the different characters. And it was just nice exploring areas that I hadn't done before. But it's a great game. And if you have got a Sega Master System, or if you haven't played this game before, definitely give this game a go. There's hours and hours and hours of gameplay. And the music, again, is phenomenal. The music is probably some of my favourite music I've actually ever heard in the game. They're really catchy, they're really jolly. Other times it can be a bit spooky. By far, it's the best Wonder Boy game ever by miles. And I had to include that in my top 20.
Hello everybody, this is Damien and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Next up at number 15, I have got Super Mario Land. Now this was in the Game Boy. Now, the reason why I love this game so much was because this was one of the first games I got on my Game Boy. And to this day, it's one of the games I play on my Game Boy. So why is this game so good? Well, basically, it's Super Mario. Now, it doesn't go as deep as, say, Super Mario 3 or Super Mario World. It's like Super Mario, the first one on the NES. You know, but smaller graphics, but everything works really, really well. You know, it's kind of hard. I think a lot of platforming games struggled on the Game Boy because the sprites were either too big or the scrolling didn't work. But everything about this game worked because the sprites were really, really tiny, but it wasn't difficult where you couldn't see what was going on. And it was so beautifully designed. You know, the levels were easy. You could always get a little bit further every single time. And again, it's just the music was out of this world. Now, I think there was a remix music of the original Super Mario. I think it was DJ Mario or something. But I remember that was even in the charts. But this game, again, the bosses aren't too hard. It's simple to get into. You've got a little submarine section. You've got a little section when you're flying, like an aeroplane. And this is one of the first games that didn't actually have Bowser as a baddie. I know Super Mario 2 doesn't have Bowser, but this one doesn't either. I can't remember what his name, Tatanga. He's like a little alien creature who I think also appears in another Nintendo game. So maybe one of you guys can tell me that. But yeah, Super Mario Land is one of the best games ever. It's not a difficult game. You can finish it within about half an hour. It's not tough at all. It's a great little game that I play sometimes on my commute to work because sometimes my journey only takes me 40 minutes and I want to finish a game sometimes, and whenever I want to sort of feel like I've done something and finished the game, it's always a game that I can pick up and play. So yeah, definitely check out Super Mario Land. Now next up is a game on the Commodore 64, and this is at number 14, and it's Bruce Lee. Now, Bruce Lee is one of my favourite games ever. Now, I've chosen the C64 version, but the ZX Spectrum version and the Amstrad versions are good, but the C64 is slightly better. The Amstrad's got the brightest colours, the Spectrum plays well, but it's a bit too easy, and the C64 plays ultra fast, and it's a little bit tougher than the others, which makes it a little bit more of a challenge. But what I like about this game was, because I've always been into Bruce Lee, I've always been into martial arts, and back in the early 80s, this game was published by US Gold. You basically got to play the role as Bruce Lee in this little platforming, beat-em-up type game. And it's really simple little graphics, and if you can just imagine like Manic Miner, sort of that sort of style graphics, or Jet Set Willy, but doing like a flying kick or punching where you can hit like your enemies, and you only get really two enemies. You get the green Yama, which was like a fat sumo, and you get a little ninja, which I used to call a Nigel the Ninja. And the whole idea is basically you've got to try and collect every single lantern that there is in a room. So you've got to climb up ladders, jump over things, jump up and collect the lanterns. Once you've done that, you move on to the next room, and so on and so on and so on. Now, I don't think the game's necessarily huge. I think it's probably only got about 30-40 screens, and it's really easy to finish. But again, the gameplay is just so simple and so addictive, and yeah, it's to me, that is has to be one of the best Bruce Lee games ever. I really enjoyed it. I've played other Bruce Lee games, like on the Super Nintendo, I think it was called Dragon, but none have ever felt like this for me. It's this really enjoyable little platforming, kick-em-up, punch-em-up game that you can just pick up and play. And again, you can finish this in under about 15 minutes, I think, if you know the layout. It has got one section which is a little bit tougher than normal, and that is the section where you've got like these things on the floor. It's like electricity, which you've got to jump over, and sometimes, you know, they run towards you, or other times they run from behind you. So it's all about careful jumping. So yeah, next up at number 13, we have Target Renegade on the ZX Spectrum. Target Renegade, wow. Now, I've done an 8-bit wars on this. I've already mentioned to everyone that the ZX Spectrum version is better than the Amstrad version and the C64 version. Loads of C64 fans go, no, the C64 version is better. Even Glenn said the C64 version was better. But Glenn played both versions and he ended up saying that the Spectrum version was better. For him, I think it was nostalgia. He had remembered this game being actually better on the C64, but once he played it on the Spectrum, he saw that it's a better game on the ZX Spectrum. For a start, it controls really good, controls well. It's a two-player game, the music's fantastic, and it is probably the closest we could get to like a proper scrolling beat-em-up on the ZX Spectrum, because there's not that many decent ones on the ZX Spectrum. You had Double Dragon, which unfortunately had terrible graphics, controls were terrible. What else did you have? Final Fight, which had beautiful graphics, but unfortunately didn't play well. But this had everything. The sprites were detailed, you could play with a friend, you had loads of moves at your disposal. You had the flying kick, the back kick, the knee to the groin, you could sort of punch them when they're on the floor. It was like an amazing game, and I love it. I think it's only got about 6 levels, but I can't go into a car park now without thinking or humming the music from Target Renegade. So whenever I'm in a car park, I hear the music from Target Renegade, because that's how much this game's really sort of ingrained itself into my memory. It's one of the best scrolling beat-em-ups ever. Well, technically, flick screen beat-em-up on the ZX Spectrum. It's a game that everyone should check out, and I'd like to give a mention to the version that's actually recently been made on the PC. Now, there was a version that was meant to be coming out on the iPhone, but due to copyright reasons and other reasons which I won't go on about, unfortunately won't come out on the iPhone, but it will be out on the PC, which you can download and give a go. And the actual graphics were actually done by our co-host, Wayne. So yeah, Swenny's done some amazing graphics there, so definitely check that game out, and the remake as well. Now next up, we've got, at number 12, another ZX Spectrum game, RoboCop. Now RoboCop, wow. It was a game made by Ocean, based on the Paul Verhoeven movie with the same name. The movie basically saw Alex Murphy get gunned down and killed by Clarence Bodiger and co. And he gets brought back by OCP as a half-man, half-robot cop, basically. And the ZX Spectrum version is one of the best games ever. I mean, the graphics are amazing, the playability is amazing, but most of all, it's the sound. The sound really sells it to me. Once again, the sound effects, the sampled speech, it's just stunning. I still can't believe to this day that the ZX Spectrum can produce music like this. Now, the sound effects at the beginning, it would say your prime directives, which I'll probably play right now.
Serve the public trust. Protect the innocent. Uphold the law.
And that was just something unheard of back in the Specky days. Sample speech like that never sounded so good on the Spectrum. And the music as well was the music which was done by Jonathan Dunn, I believe, which also appeared in the Ariston adverts, which was the Game Boy version of the music that appeared in there. But it's one of the most memorable, haunting, beautiful tracks ever, and it really complements the game beautifully. It really is an amazing game. The only downside is it's a little bit too easy, the game, but I think the game's got enough variety for it to work, and I've got this when it came out full price for about $11.99, and it was worth every single penny. You know, the first level was from left to right, shoot 'em up. I think the second level is the one where the you got to shoot the rapist while he's trying to sort of like, he's got the woman hostage. In the film, you got to shoot the guy in the and in the game, you can try and do that, but you can also try and shoot him in the arm or the head and so on. It's a great little game. It's probably the best RoboCop game that was ever made. And the Spectrum version, again, is probably the definitive version, even better than the Data East version, which is the arcade version, which is slightly different. Now, next up, at number 11, is Double Dragon, the arcade. I remember the first time I played this game. I fell in love with this game. You play the role of Billy Lee, or if you're two players, Jimmy Lee as well. Now, basically, the story is Marion's been kidnapped by Machine Gun Willie and co. So it's up to you guys, the twins, to go and rescue her. Simple story that works. A nice little revenge story. And I'd never played anything like this in the arcade before. It really felt like I was in an action movie, you know, because you could just walk along, beat the crap out of baddies, flying kick them, elbow to the face, knee to the face. It was just superb. And I love the fact as well that you could pick up weapons. And like Swain's mentioned loads and loads of times, these weapons, they would stay with you right to the end of the level. Not like in most games, you use the weapons a few times, the weapon either breaks or disappears. No, this weapon, if you could keep hold of it, you get to the end of the level without losing it, which is, it's amazing. And the other beautiful thing about this game was, like Swaney also mentioned, is it continues. So when you get to the end of the level, it sort of scrolls along and the next level starts again. And that's something that really hadn't been done again, well, since Double Dragon 2. But to me, Double Dragon works because, again, the music is so damn catchy. Every level music is memorable. It really is. It sticks in your mind. It's beautiful. And the scenery of the games, it hasn't got a lot of levels, but the levels it does have really suit its environment. And yeah, absolutely love this game. Definitely give it a go. Notable conversions, I would say, is the Sega Master System version. It's a great version, and I quite enjoy the Game Boy version, actually. It's slightly different to the arcade, but I'd definitely recommend that one.
This is Matt Dinaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into the Retro Asylum podcast.
At number 10, this is where things are going to get interesting, Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube. Now, I love my Resident Evil games. I love zombies. I love anything horror. I'm a big horror movie fan. And I love the first Resident Evil because I was a big George Romero fan. And this, at the time, was the closest I could get to reliving in real life, sort of, well, in a computer game, like zombies invading the city. And it was fantastic. And I love the way the Resident Evil games started progressing. Resident Evil 2 was better than Resident Evil 1. Resident Evil 3, slightly the same. Code Veronica, stunning. And then later on the GameCube came this game, which really split people's view on the game, really. I fall into the camp where I think this game improved it and it peaked. I don't think this game has been beaten. Where other people think, well, it's a slight departure of what Resident Evil was. It's not survival horror anymore. But for me, it was fantastic. You play the role of Leon Kennedy, who's been assigned to find the president's daughter, I believe. And it's just got so much atmosphere. It really has. It's got everything in this game. Beautiful sound, beautiful graphics. They're just stunning. To this day, they look amazing. It's just absolutely amazing graphics. I just love the whole sort of fear that you have in this game. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that's not survival horror. Hey, I've got to disagree. You have to survive sometimes. It's just done in a slightly different way. I think the way Capcom did it, they evolved this game. Now, originally, this game went through loads of different changes. What originally was going to be Resident Evil 4 turned out to be Devil May Cry. That's what it morphed into. Then there was another Resident Evil 4 game that came out. Capcom thought it was too similar to Silent Hill, and it didn't really fit into that universe. And I think there was another one, which I don't know too much about, but the version that we all love, and I love playing, is the GameCube version, and that's been ported to the PS2, to the Wii, to the Xbox 360, and so on. But it's just, I love the gameplay mechanics. It's simple. The only thing I don't like is that you can't walk and shoot. So every time you want to shoot, you've got to stop. And I think sometimes as well, if there's something behind you, it lacks that. But I think because of the control restrictions, that really helps in a way crank up the tension. As an example, there's a bit where you've got to fight against the big giant thing. I can't remember what his name was. The big giant ogre type thing. He's really big, fills up the whole field of vision on the screen. And sometimes what you need to do is run away from him, but by the time you sort of run away and turn back around, he's right on you. So that is kind of scary, but like I said before, I love the atmosphere of this game. The atmosphere is truly there. The set pieces are just so well done. Now, what I mean set pieces is, like, if you look at Resident Evil 5, it improves on a few things in the game mechanics, but the graphics, the graphics are good, but the levels are nowhere near as memorable as the level design of Resident Evil 4, and I think that's what really worked. You know, I love all the boss battles. I remember the first time going into the lake and that big lake creature sort of trying to get me, and I'm trying to spear it. The bit where you first shoot the those granados, and you automatically try and shoot it in the head, and its head explodes, and you're like, yes! And then this big sort of like spider-like creature starts sort of like flicking around. And the moment that really made me crap my pants was the chainsaw wielding enemy, because they could kill you with one swipe of that chainsaw. And there's two occasions where it really just, it was nail biting stuff, and it kept on killing me. There's one where you first encounter them. I think you come out of a house and then they come at you. You could be shooting them, and they just take so much damage, but it really just, and you can hear that noise and it gets louder and louder and louder. And it's a later on level, I think, when you're on like a factory level and you've got a couple of those chainsaw things chasing after you, and it's like, oh, it's frustrating. But it's one of the most polished, amazing games that Capcom have done, and I really hope that Capcom capture that magic again for Resident Evil 6. I really do. Now, at number 9, we've got this is on the ZX Spectrum. Now, some people might go, oh my god, a ZX Spectrum game ahead of all those other games that you mentioned? Nah, the reason why I've got it there is because it is the most perfect Dizzy game. It's better than Treasure Island Dizzy because you get more lives and it's not as cruel that way. So it's easier. But it's a really beautiful game, and I think it's when Dizzy really peaked. It had everything. It had the inventory, which was vastly improved from the Treasure Island Dizzy inventory. The inventory in Treasure Island Dizzy, you'd select something, every time you'd pick something else up, your other thing would scroll down. So it was really tough sometimes, you know, you'd lose a life when you didn't need to be, really. Whereas Fantasy World Dizzy, you could be a lot more precise. And it's a great game, had loads of screens, had that magical moment when basically you had, you could see Treasure Island Dizzy on the main hall. What else did it have? Dizzy could get drunk. If Dizzy drank from a bottle of rum, I think it was, or whiskey, he would start rolling around automatically, so you had to be really careful that you wouldn't roll off into like the water. You had the snapping crocodile, you had the dragon, which threw, you know, breathe fire at you. You had the upside down land. You had the beanstalk, which would take you up into the clouds. You had the illusion level. It just had so many little touches, which really just, to me, is the most perfect Dizzy. And if the Oliver Twins ever make another Dizzy game for the iPhone, I'd say, guys, do a Fantasy World Dizzy. It's pure perfection. It's Dizzy at its best, and it's one of the best ZX Spectrum games ever, and I'm so glad I included this in my top 20 games ever. It's, yeah, superb game. Now, next up is Streets of Rage 2 on the Sega Mega Drive, and that is at number 8. Now, I love Streets of Rage, but Streets of Rage 2 did everything bit better. It really amplified everything. First of all, you had more characters to choose from. Secondly, the characters had a lot more moves at their disposal. It wasn't just like, you know, move left, right, flying kick, punch, kick. You could tap forward a couple of times, do like a special move by just holding one of the buttons down. So you could sort of like do loads of little punches or shoot something or do like a big swipe thing depending on the character that you had. But what I loved about this game was it just felt like there was nothing quite like this on the arcades, on any other home system. The music was just stunning, absolutely stunning. It was like some sort of techno-y sort of music, which was just, so yeah, the music in this game was just phenomenal. I just can't speak volumes about how amazing this game was. The music did it fantastic. But again, it wasn't just the music and the gameplay. It was the visuals. The visuals, I hadn't seen anything like that. They were really bright. You had so much detail. And it just did things that I didn't think that the Mega Drive could do. There's certain levels, it's like, again, it's very Geiger-y. And I know the Mega Drive couldn't do fogging like the Super Nintendo, but you know what? It gave it its best shot, and that whole level was just spooky and scary. And yeah, I think it did get a lot of influence from Street Fighter, because it had characters that were like Blanka. Oh yeah, you also had another character that was like a character from Punch-Out. It was an interesting game, best played with a friend's. It even had a duel mode where you could actually fight against each other. Now, if you want to play the definitive version of Streets of Rage, I reckon you check out Bomber Games' Streets of Rage Remake and that really took all the elements of Streets of Rage 2 and it combined it with Streets of Rage 1, Streets of Rage 3, and it's a game that I reckon you should check out. I'm sure you'll be able to find it online, but wow, what a game Streets of Rage 2 was. Simply stunning. Now next up, at number 7, we've got Chucky Egg on the ZX Spectrum. Now again, I've got another ZX Spectrum game here. Now why is this game so high up in the charts? Because it's so damn playable. Graphics are really nice and simple. It's probably made in the mid 80s or early 80s, but its playability. And this game is still as playable now as it was back then. There's still nothing quite like this. It's one of the most perfect games ever. You basically control Hen House Harry and this little platformer, which kind of feels like Donkey Kong and Rocket Man on the ZX81. Basically, you control him. You've got to try and collect all the eggs while avoiding these big birds that try and kill you. And you've got to jump over things, climb up ladders, collect bird seed for extra points. Later on in the levels, there's gaps, there's things you can fall down, there's lifts that you can go up on. And I forgot to mention, there's this big cage on the top left-hand side that's got this big, massive yellow duck. If you go through a certain amount of levels, it loops again from the beginning, and then that big yellow duck comes out of the cage. And my God, the difficulty in that game really cranks up. So if you think that you've perfected it, not only do you have to worry about those big birds, you've got to worry about that big flying yellow duck. And it's just the game that you've really got to put time and effort to get really good at it. I remember a few years ago, I really spent a lot of time playing this game and I did really, really, really well on it. At some point, I'd love to do a high score challenge on the Retro Asylum forum, so that'll be one to look out for, actually. But Chucky Egg, it's a game I think that Elite should definitely release on the Xbox 360. I mean, I'll definitely buy it. I think it'd be amazing if it had like a high score leaderboard thing where you can compare your score with your friends. It'd be amazing. So Steve Wilcox, if you're listening to this, please, please, please make Chucky Egg come out on the Xbox 360. Definitely. Now next up at number 6 is Symphony of the Night on the PS1. Now this game really wowed me. It's one of the first games on the PS1 that made me think, wow, I've not played anything like this before. Now I've always been a big Castlevania fan since Super Castlevania 4 on the Super Nintendo. I really loved that game and it probably is still one of my favorite games ever. But this took all the elements that made that game special and really cranked it up. The game starts off after Rondo of Blood, which was like Super Castlevania 4, but it was on the PC Engine, I think on the CD thing. And the animation is fantastic for a start. So the first part of the game is you play as Richard Belmont and you defeat Dracula. And then once you've done that, it tells you a story about how Dracula comes back every couple of 100,000 years. And now he's going to be back. And you play the role of Alucard, which is the son of Dracula. And Alucard, first of all, starts off with a few simple abilities. You can jump, you can swipe, and it's got like an RPG element because you gain points, you gain money, so you can upgrade your moves. And you can even unlock a few moves later on. There's certain sections that you can't get to, but by turning into mist or by sort of doing a super jump, you can progress through all these things. I mean, I think there's a level where you get different armor, and your different armor will affect whether you can walk on spikes and so on. But what I love about this game is not just the whole playability, because it really is this the Metroidvania style gameplay, which I love, but it's the music. The music is probably some of the best music I've heard, and I've used this expression before. It's beautiful, it's haunting, it's scary, it's dramatic. And just when you think you've finished the game, there's more to it. You've got the inverted castle. Now, the first time I played this game was back when I used to work in the Trocadero when it was Sega World. And I remember telling one of the guys that used to work there, oh yeah, I finished this game. And he was like, actually, have you done the Inverted Castle? And I'm like, no idea what you're talking about. And then he told me about the goggles. And I don't want to ruin it if you haven't really done it, but the goggles make you see something. And once you, if you use the goggles and you do it this way, it opens up a whole inverted castle with new enemies. And it's just more gameplay. And then you think, that's it. No. Then you can play the whole game again as Richard Belmont. So again, it's even more gameplay for the money it was worth, I guess. Now, let's move on to my next game. Now, at number 5, we've got Majora's Mask on the N64. Now, the reason why I love this game is whenever people think of the best Zelda game, people think Ocarina of Time. And don't get me wrong, I love Ocarina of Time. I think it's a fantastic game, programmed beautifully, storyline's amazing. But I'll always go for Majora's Mask. It used the extra bit of RAM, so the graphics looked that little bit better, a little bit more HD, I think, or high res, I should say. The story was slightly different, though. This isn't set in Hyrule. Basically, it sees Link, he's on Epona, and Skull Kid jumps out, and basically, he nicks this mask, which is Majora's Mask, basically, and it makes him really, really strong. And he basically sends Link into Clock Town World, I think it was called, or whatever it was called. And basically, you've got 3 days to stop the moon from crashing into the that little planet that you're in, whether it's Earth or whatever you want to call it. And at first, I thought, oh my god, I got 3 days to do it. How am I meant to do it? But then you get the ocarina. Now, the beauty of this is you learn certain songs. You can sort of slow down time. You can speed up time. You can even play songs that make you travel back to the first day, or you can play music, you know, that make you travel to the second day. Now, the beautiful thing about this game is you encounter certain characters. Certain characters, you can only do the missions on certain days. So it's trying to find out, you know, going back and forth, which adds a lot to it. The next thing I love about this game as well was the masks. Now, unlike any other Zelda games, you get abilities by putting these masks on. You've got the Dooku Scrub mask, which makes you turn into this little tree-type creature. You've got the Zora mask, which makes you swim under the water really fast. And you've got the Goron, which basically you can roll around and so on. And each creature you turn into has got their own ability and the pros and cons. But the level layout is fantastic, and there's so many secrets to discover. I remember playing this game for about 2 or 3 years in a row. Every day I'd discover something different, like Keaton, which is like a Pikachu type character. I didn't know anything about him until, I think, you know, maybe the second year of playing this game. And if you wear a Keaton mask at a certain point, he'll ask you certain questions. You ask certain things right, you get different things. And it's got loads of little mini games, and it's one of the best games ever. I mean, the ending's phenomenal. If anything's better than Ocarina of Time, guys, definitely check it out. At number 4, Super Metroid. Now, I love my Metroidvania style games, but Super Metroid was like, wow, what a stunning game. Now, this game took all the elements that were from the NES games and just really ran with it, really added so much atmosphere. It really had that whole discover a new object, you can sort of, now you can go into the next area, but it's done so well. So first of all, the game's a little bit tough. The enemies that you're killing take a while to get hit. You get hit a little bit, your energy goes down quite a bit, so it's really hard to begin off with. But as you progress, your strength starts growing, your character starts getting stronger, your character starts jumping higher, you get new weapons, you get new abilities, and it's just one of those games that just, it's huge. I think it was one of the first 24 meg games on the Super Nintendo, if I'm right. I think it also even came with a map as well of the actual game. But I remember some of the levels as well. It had this big giant creature, and I think it just starts edging towards you, and then I think you've got like a volcano thing, like all this lava pit behind you. And again, it's just magical, absolutely fantastic. It's an experience, this game. It's one of the only ways I can describe it. It's definitely an experience, and it's a good experience at that, to be honest. Now, next up at number 3 is Bubble Bobble, the arcade game. Now, I think everyone knows who, you know, what Bubble Bobble is all about. It's Bob, it's Bob. It's the little bubble-blowing dragons. Basically, the baddies, Baron Von Blubber. The way it works is, in this little platformer, you jump up, you see a baddie, you blow a bubble, you capture him. Defeat the baddie, you jump underneath, you pop the bubble. You pop all the bubbles with the baddies in them, you move on to the next level. Simple as. But it gets tougher and tougher and tougher. But luckily you've got little things that help you out the way. You know, you've got like the yellow chewing gum or the blue one, depending on what version you're playing. You've got the little red shoes, you've got the teapot. And then you've got all the different endings as well, which I never really did because I've never actually finished this game. But so yeah, guys, definitely play this in two players because you'll get hours and hours of gameplay. It's best played in two players, not so great in one player. It's one of the best games ever, and I highly recommend that you check it out, definitely. Now next up, my number 2 game is Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo. Now, to me, this is probably the finest and best Super Mario game ever. To me, this is the best Super Mario game ever. There have been other amazing games like Super Mario 3, Mario 64, but the reason why I love Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo was because it's just so much replayability factor. It's an easy game to get into. You can sort of do it pretty much any route you want to. Once you've unlocked a few things, you can sort of like go back to the level you were doing before to gain a few extra lives. And I love all the little touches it's got. It's just, you don't just have to follow, like, you know, from A to B to C. Certain levels have got different exits. So I think if it was like a big red thing on the map screen, they had either 2 or 3 different exits. I mean, I remember the first time, it's one of the first levels, you're underwater and I think you hit the P switch and you pick up the key, and if you can get right down to the end and then hit the P switch, then it's like a little keyhole. If you do that, you unlock another little part of it. It had loads of unlockable levels, like Star Road was one of them, and Star Road was fantastic. You know, the game again wasn't too difficult to finish. It was the definitive Mario game. You had your spin jump, Mario had abilities like the cape, you know, you could fly like Superman, you had the fire flower, and you had loads of other little things. But to me, it's one of the best games ever. Definitely recommend that you check it out, and it's one of the best Mario games in my opinion. Now at number 1 for me, it could only be one game, and that game was Street Fighter 2 the arcade. Now I love this game. Now the reason why, okay, it's Street Fighter 2, The World Warriors. Now I know it had Championship Edition, Turbo and the hack versions, but I'm going to go for The World Warriors because to me that's the definitive fighting game. There's not, well, at the time there was nothing quite like it. I'd played games like, I can't remember what it's called now, Karate Fighter. It's the one with the two joysticks. I've played games like IK Plus. I'd played games like Where the Exploding Fist, but this really took it to a different level for the fact that every character, I think you had 8 characters to choose from, and it just played different. It really did. You know, Ryu and Ken had the same sort of move set, and then you had Chun-Li who was fast, and she was, could do that, you know, they tap the button, you could do that kick thing, that really fast kick. I'd always go for characters like that to begin off with when I first started playing. Go for a character like E Honda, because E Honda, you know, he could sort of like do that 100 hand slap thing. So I like the way, as I got better, I started playing with different characters. I mean, I think mostly everyone's first few characters would be someone like Dal Sin as well, because he could stretch really far. But so there was so much variety in the characters themselves, and that's one of the reasons why I liked this game. But it wasn't just like that. You had special moves that you could do by sort of like moving, like, you know, down, forward. You could do like a fireball. That's probably not how you do the fireball, but I loved the game for that. It was always good to unlock different things. I'll always remember the first World Warriors as well, that Blanka, if Blanka was doing that spin roll towards you, that cannonball attack, if you timed it right and you got him with a dragon punch, half his energy would go down, and I loved that. Now, I think they slightly changed that for other Street Fighter 2 games, but again, it was just a magical experience, because, you know, you could counter moves. You had the strong, weak, medium punches. So if you could get in with your little quick jabs quickly and then follow up with a strong, there were so many different combinations. And that's the sort of thing that were missing from other games, like, say, Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat didn't have combinations. Mortal Kombat just looked nice. Mortal Kombat was just, all the fighters had the same sort of move sets, but in this, it was unique. It had so many frames of animation. I mean, in the arcade, if you punch someone as well, sometimes a character puked out blood, which is, it was amazing. You know, it was a nice little touch. And I love the bonus levels as well, the thing where you smash up the cars. I used to love smashing up that car, you know, it was fun. You know, especially with the time limit going down, then you have to sort of like try and destroy it as fast as you can. So yeah, Street Fighter 2 is definitely one of my favourite games ever. I love playing it in one player. It's even better playing it in two player. I played it quite a lot on the Super Nintendo, but the reason why I've gone for the arcade is because that was the first time I actually ever played it. Played it for hours, and it was just an experience, and I'd always love to have a Street Fighter 2 arcade machine. So yeah, guys, that is the end of episode 21. Hope you've enjoyed my top 20. Again, guys, please let me know if you agree or disagree with my choice. Now, we will go back to an episode 22 to having like a co-host. I've had to do this pretty much last moment because this show has to come out on Friday. I'm recording it on Thursday nights. Not had a lot of sleep, but I wanted to do a show for you guys, because I promised I'm going to do it weekly, and I'm going to sort of like do a weekly show, whether it kills me or not. So guys, please feel free to give us an iTunes reviews. It really motivates us, makes us happy, and it gets us noticed. Why not join us and follow us on Twitter? We're Retro Asylum 1 on Twitter. Why not sort of like us on Facebook? So yeah, why not add us on Facebook and spread the word? So guys, I'm rambling on now. We'll see you next week with episode 21 and a half, and our guest is Retro Darren. See you next time. Goodbye.